Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who?
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars, the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. I'm your host, Rob Irwin, and I'm very happy to say this is episode 20 of the podcast. Yes, we've hit episode 20, and all before 2014 ends, which is pretty cool. Speaking of the year ending, I guess this is the time of year where we've just had Christmas and we're looking ahead to New Year's Eve and so on. And I've had obviously some time off work like many people out there. And I've been able to chat with people and, you know, talk about what they did for Christmas or what they're doing for New Year. And it always just brings it home to me at this time of year just how different our experiences can be. Obviously up there in the Northern Hemisphere where a lot of Who Wars listeners are in North America and also in the UK. Obviously it's been very cold, it's been snowing for some of you, it's just that time of year, whereas down here it's obviously very, very hot. It's summer, we're playing cricket, we're, you know, swimming in swimming pools, we're at the beach, we're not really wanting to eat big hot Christmas dinners, but a lot of us still do. You know, it's just a funny time of year, and I'm always reminded of it this time of year, and more so when I'm talking to, you know, people who work on the Who Wars podcast here with me, or who are, you know, listeners, and we get chatting on Twitter and so on. It's just really great. So I know it's cliche, but what a wonderful time of the year this is. It's really great just to sit here and be recharging the batteries, and, you know, looking ahead to 2015, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff coming in 2015. You know, I mean, Star Wars, obviously, at the end of the year, but before we get there, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff happening. So, you know, my advice is to rest up and be ready for it. All right, now, before we kick on with my top stories of the week, I did want to, you know, raise a little editorial topic here, which has been on my mind for, maybe a couple of months now. And it first came into my mind in relation to Doctor Who, but it can relate to Star Wars and it can relate to everything in pop culture that we consume. So, you know, please bear with me. This is not just a Doctor Who conversation about to happen. But what I noticed initially with Doctor Who, listening to a lot of podcasts out there, you'd have fans, you know, much like myself, who, when they're talking about episodes from the 60s or 70s or 80s, they would know who wrote it, who directed it, who the producer was, you know, 101 quirky little facts about it, who, you know, played particular roles, you know, not even main roles, but who played, you know, some bit part role and so on. And then those same people, when talking about an episode that might have screened the week before, might have had a rough idea who the writer was if it was one of the more well-known writers, often didn't know the director off the top of their head or the producer. And, you know, just this disparity between what they know about the classic series and what they know about something they've just watched and have been reading about, and you know, it should be top of mind, you would think, but it's not. And yes, I know there's the argument that with the older stuff, you've had many years to think about it and read up on it, but I'm starting to wonder whether entertainment these days is a bit more disposable. And now thinking about this in more broader terms, I was thinking about watching a movie last night, and I own a lot of DVDs, tons and tons and tons of DVDs. People are genuinely shocked when I say I have a lot of DVDs, and they're like, oh yeah, and then they come over and see my collection, their mouths hang open. You know, it's a stupidly big collection of DVDs, and I'm just embarking in more recent times on Blu-ray. I don't have as many of those. And anyway, I was looking at this big collection, I was thinking, what do I want to watch? And I've got all sorts of stuff. You know, I've got, you know, 1920s black and white silent films through to the latest and greatest, you know, digital creations from the last year or so. And looking, I'm looking, and what did I pick? I picked Ghostbusters. no particular reason, but when I was thinking about it in relation to this editorial, I thought maybe there's an argument that we go for things that are comfortable, and maybe we reach a point in our lives where when you're 10, 15, 20 years in the future from that point, it's that point in your life that you still want to go back to. I mean, I do this with music a lot. I had a real passion for music all my life. It's kind of dropped off in recent years. I still quite like listening to music, but I don't follow it as much or buy as much of it as I used to. And when I think about my touch points for music, obviously I grew up loving things like the Beatles and so on, and the Doors and, you know, older bands like that. But when you look at contemporary music from a particular time in my life that I really loved, it's probably around 1992, 1993, 1994, you know, 95 maybe. And I'm often going back to music artists' albums that I got into at that time. And maybe Ghostbusters is a similar thing, you know. Return of the Jedi had come out the year before. Ghostbusters came out in 1984. You know, you think of 1985 and, you know, the Back to the Future films and so on. And then it's, you know, a hop, step and a jump away to things like Top Gun and Platoon. And, you know, movies that I've seen many, many times. And if you sat me down and said, hey, would you like to watch Platoon or Top Gun or Back to the Future or Ghostbusters or Return of the Jedi, I would say hell yes, in a way that if you skipped forward 10 years to 94, ironically the period where I love a lot of music from, and said, do you want to watch some films? And I can't even think of a film from 1994 off the top of my head, which is perhaps telling. I'd probably say no thanks. Or even if you said, hey, do you want to put on The Avengers or put on, you know, Thor or something? You know, something very contemporary with lots of great effects, and we'll watch it in Blu-ray. It'll look lovely on your new TV, Rob, and, you know, it'll sound great on your new soundbar. And all of this, I'm like, oh, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. You know, I'm just not as into it. So I do have this theory that maybe there's this time in our lives where everything is just awesome and we love going back to that time. It feels comfortable. Maybe it feels like a blanket. And maybe more so than entertainment being disposable per se, maybe we all like to go back to those sorts of times. Maybe there are people listening to this who are saying, what, you can't think of a movie from 1994? Oh my God, it was the year that blah, 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 and blah came out. And I can't believe you wouldn't like a movie from 1994. And that's maybe because they're 10 years younger than me. And to them, that's their happy sort of spot. I don't know. Maybe there's no one answer to this. But, you know, those Doctor Who podcasts and the way that people were so into particular eras and knew everything about it and yet could barely tell you half as much or a quarter as much about things that they've just seen, I do wonder whether there's something to it. Even now, I look at, you know, my Doctor Who DVDs. I collect each series on DVD. And I look at, you know, the Series 5 or 6 DVDs, maybe Series 7. Do I have any interest in pulling those out and looking at them right now? No. No, I really don't. Maybe some of the earlier series, perhaps, because I haven't seen them for a little while. But then again, with the repeats on Australian television, it's hard not to have seen them many times already by accident, you know, the accidental viewer. But meanwhile, I also own a lot of the classic era stuff, and I'm probably more inclined to pull out a William Hartnell story or a Patrick Troughton story, or maybe some of the 80s stories that I grew up with, you know, with my doctor, Peter Davison. You know, I'd probably love to put on Kinder right now, for example. So have a think about it. Maybe get back to me on this. You know, write me an email or tweet me or something. If you have similar feelings about entertainment either being disposable these days and we just don't pay as much attention to it and we aren't as interested in it, you know, is there too much out there to watch? Is that part of the problem? You know, when I think back to 1984 and watching Ghostbusters, were there any other films around it that I wanted to watch? Maybe there weren't. Whereas today, you know, every month there's a new film coming out that, you know, Hollywood wants you to watch and that your friends might want you to watch. You know, I'm thinking if you're maybe, you know, 15 years old or something and in the target market for these things, is there just more out there now? Or is there this magical time in our lives that once you reach 40, you know, like I'll be in 2015 or beyond, you can look back and see particular eras that resonate with you, and other eras that have come afterwards, you can barely remember a thing about. Again, I can't think of a single film that came out in 1994 off the top of my head. Can you? I don't know. Depends maybe what age you are. Anyway, that was a bit of a meandering editorial to kick off the show, but thank you for indulging me. I guess it's the kind of, you know, philosophical mindset I'm in at the moment, just kicking back and thinking about things. Hopefully it's kickstarted some thoughts for you, and you can email me or tweet me or Facebook me or whatever you like. But now, without any further ado, let's have a look at the stories of the week. Okie dokie, into the stories of the week, and I guess one of the really cool stories that is out this week comes from Slash Film, and they've talked for a little while about the possible Star Wars standalone films coming out. There have been a lot of rumours about these over the past year. You know, is it a Boba Fett film? Is it a Yoda film? Is it a film called Red 5, which might be about Luke Skywalker, or might not be? Is it about a fighter pilot, you know, in Rogue Squadron? Maybe the fighter pilot before Luke was Red 5. Who knows? Is it an Obi-Wan film? Is it this? Is it that? Who knows? And as we get closer, I guess, to some of these films being made, you know, obviously Star Wars Episode 7 is in the can, they're working on that. They're now thinking about when they'll be filming Star Wars Episode 8 and these solo films. And I guess there's a hint there with the word solo films. There is a rumour that one of these standalone films could be a Han Solo movie. And indeed, that production on it might overlap to some degree with Episode 8. But what does this mean? Does that mean that Han Solo is definitely in Episode 8? Okay, that might be a spoiler, perhaps, that he doesn't get bumped off in Episode 7. Or could this be a younger Han Solo that we're talking about? And although they're using maybe some of the same sets and so on as Episode 8, you know, they'd obviously want the Millennium Falcon prop, for example. Maybe that's the overlap, and maybe Han Solo will be played by a younger actor. Because I guess when you think about it, although we're very, very happy to have Harrison Ford back as Han Solo, he is an older actor. He did look a little old for it in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, and that was years ago now. And, yeah, so although we're happy for him to be back in Star Wars, at least it's in a more minor sort of role, as far as we're aware, as all these new characters, you know, Daisy Ridley and John Boyega and so on, are on the rise. It still leaves this question that will this Han Solo movie, or standalone movie, I should say, be a younger Han, or is it the older Han? You know, what's going on? But it does seem that one of these standalone movies is a Han Solo film. That's very, very cool. I'm reminded back in the old EU novels, which are now legend novels, of the Han Solo trilogy. That was a younger Han Solo in those. And they were really great stories. You know, seeing Han Solo before we came across him in A New Hope, it was really enjoyable. If they can capture that sort of feeling and fun and excitement and, you know, swashbuckling adventure in a film with a younger actor as Han Solo, that could be, you know, really, really great. So we'll just wait and see what happens. Moving on, there's a lot of videos like this out there on the net. I guess they started, you know, years ago, where adults would ask children questions about things from pop culture, and the kids would often say outrageous things, or they'd have strange interpretations of films, or they'd misremember what happened in a film, and then they'd tell you what apparently happened, and it was so off the mark, it was just hilariously funny. So I guess you can say videos like this are a dime a dozen these days, but there's still ones that come out that make me smile, make me laugh, and there's one pretty recent one that's popped out. It popped out I think just before Christmas, and it's called A 5-Year-Old Girl Discusses Princess Leia's Slave Outfit with Dad. Now, it only goes for about a minute and a half or so, so I won't play the whole thing. I'll play you a little snippet of the audio now, and then put the link in the show notes so you can go and give the video a hit, because it deserves it. And also, it's quite fun to see the video. It's sort of animated as well, in sync with the audio. It's well worth watching, not just hearing here. So here's a little snippet from it.
What are you looking at?
Star Wars.
A book. What's it called?
Star Wars.
Yeah, but it's the Star Wars Annual. And it's full of breakdowns about all the characters in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what were you saying?
Well, I know Jabba the Hutt is a baddie.
Jabba the Hutt.
Yes. But he actually chose for Leia to dress up as a slave. He actually chose a really nice dress because I like the way he put the sort of tiara, the bands, these, this, that, her hair plaited. It's actually a pretty good look for her.
You reckon?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think she does look pretty. She certainly looks attractive, but some people think that, you know, it's a bit... Do you know what the word demeaning is?
No.
No.
What a cutie. It's a really fun little conversation. And again, although these things are a dime a dozen, do click on the link in the show notes. It's well worth your time. Moving on, as many of you know, the Star Wars comics are to be published by Marvel in the new year. Literally, in another week, there'll be a Star Wars comic out. I think the flagship Star Wars title, number one, will be on the shelves. And I have tried to get review copies here, but Marvel, it seems, is very odd when it comes to review copies. Apparently, they don't give review copies to anyone. So while, you know, other comic houses like Titan, for example, give us review copies, electronic versions of these review copies, not hard copy, while Titan give us these things and while other publishers do it, apparently Marvel's a bit too big for that, and if we're going to be reviewing the new Star Wars titles here on the show, we have to buy them. So that's all right. I guess between us, we'll probably be buying them anyway, but it is a little strange. I just thought I'd mention it there. Anyway, Marvel is taking over in the new year. That means, of course, that Dark Horse Comics, which has been, you know, publishing Star Wars comics since the early 1990s, you know, they picked up the license when Star Wars definitely wasn't cool, it wasn't hot, there weren't new movies coming out, there weren't even re-releases of the old movies coming out. You know, Dark Horse really believed in Star Wars, they picked it up, and they made many different ranges over the years, some of them better than others, I've got to say. There are some that Dark Horse made that just left me cold, but there are others that I think were just amazing. Anyway, they've done that for years and years, but as of January 1, they can no longer sell digital copies of these comics. So at the moment, and you've only got a few days to do this, obviously, before the end of the year, you can buy up digital versions of the Dark Horse Star Wars comics that have been published over the years. I mean, it starts at $300. If you've got $300, you can buy all 28,000 something pages worth of these comic books, which is very, very cool. It's actually well worth it if you do have a spare $300 sitting around to get so much content, which will have you reading for years and years and years from now. But if that's not your thing, if you don't want to spend $300, there are certainly different runs of stories that are well worth it. I particularly liked the Clone Wars books that were done, I want to say around 2003, but don't quote me on that. I think they were far superior to the Clone Wars TV show, whether you're talking about the cartoon version or the later CG series. I think the comic books were much more real, gritty, adult, better written. I know people out there love their Clone Wars, but I tell you what, the Dark Horse Clone Wars comics, the original run of those, I think they might have done some more Clone Wars comics later on, but I think these from around 2003, as I say, are really, really good. You know, even if you just bought that run of comics, it would be worth it. There are other great runs as well. There's one called Star Wars Legacy, for example, and it's set at least 100 years after Return of the Jedi. It might even be like 125 years after Return of the Jedi. And so all the characters you knew are dead. You know, Luke is dead, Han is dead, Leia's dead. They're all dead. We don't know how they died, but they're dead. They're out of the game. We're in the future. And it follows an offspring of one of the Skywalkers. And his name is Cade Skywalker. And that's a really interesting sort of thing. Obviously, with this stuff no longer being canon and with new movies coming out, it's all become obsolete, I guess you could say. But as a story in its own right, it's still worth reading. So yeah, if that sounds like your thing, why not head over to Dark Horse before the end of the year? If you're listening to this podcast in January or February sometime, I'm sorry, but you've missed out. But if you're listening to this in real time, so to speak, do get over there and have a think about buying some of these comics before Dark Horse is unable to sell them anymore. It's a weird sort of situation, you know. Give it some thought and see if it's for you. Finally this week, some Doctor Who news, and I guess we'll touch on this to some degree in the reviews themselves, but the news is that Jenna Coleman is sticking with Doctor Who for another series. Now, this was very surprising to me, very disappointing to me in some ways, because I have this theory, and I've gone on the accursed Gallifrey base and made it, and of course, you know, had half a dozen people tell me how wrong I was, but I have this theory that the Doctor is better and more interesting with multiple companions. And here's a good example of that. Think of the David Tennant Doctor. Think of the 10th Doctor. He had Rose as his companion for his first series. In his second series, he had Martha Jones. In his third series, he had Catherine Tate. Or I should say Donna Noble, if we're going by character names. And in his fourth series, which was a bunch of specials, you had essentially like a companion of the episode kind of thing. You had someone who fulfilled the role of a companion without being a companion. So in each of those, he had someone different. Now, there are people out there who are cheering and saying, oh, Jenna's coming back, isn't that wonderful? Yay! But I wonder if they're really thinking about this. I mean, they might quite like the character, yes, but all characters have to go at some time. And to say that, oh, look, it's great that Jenna's back and hope she comes back in the series after that, you know, well, no. I mean, the equivalent to that is that the David Tennant Doctor had Rose in his first series, and Rose in his second series, and Rose in his third series, and then, you know, had Rose in the specials. You know, how boring would that have been? And when you think about all the great and different stories we got, and situations we got, and actors we got to meet via having Rose, Martha, Donna, and all the guest companions, I wouldn't trade that for the world. And yet, and maybe this is a Stephen Moffat thing, because it sort of happened in the Matt Smith era, where you had Amy Pond hanging around with the Matt Smith Doctor, you know, episode after episode after episode, series after series. Maybe, you know, Moffat quite likes that, but I really don't. I think a Doctor is far better with multiple companions, and we've seen Clara adventure for half a series with the Matt Smith Doctor, and then do the anniversary special and the Christmas special, and then into the Capaldi era. She's done a season with him now. And looking at that Christmas special we've just had, it was the perfect time for her to go. Things got resolved with the Doctor to a better degree than they were in the series, in Series 8. They ended that series by lying to each other. Here, that lie was resolved, and they both confessed they had been lying. And at the end of the episode, where Clara is an old woman and says she's had a great life, she's toured all over Europe, she's done this, that, and the other, how wonderful. That was a great place to actually leave the Doctor and Clara. But no, Clara then had to become young again, and now she's going to adventure with the Doctor again for another series. And, you know, in the modern era, Doctors hang around for 3 or 4 years, it seems. That means if Capaldi's around for 3 series, he's going to have Clara for at least 2 of them, and we're only going to have 1 series where he's with someone new. I would have much rather seen, you know, Capaldi with Clara in his first season, and a different companion in his second season, and a different companion in his third season. It just gives you more variety in what you're looking at. It gives you more variety in the situations they get into, in the interplay between them, in the way things can be done. I think things get a bit too cozy, a bit too familiar, perhaps, when the same actor is with the Doctor series after series. So, yeah, look, I'm really disappointed. And there's quotes from Jenna in the media. She's saying, it's wonderful, I get a whole other series of stories with the Doctor, and I think for me, I couldn't walk away with the story being unresolved, and there is so much more to do. Well, is there, Jenna? Is there really? Like, you've already been the impossible girl. You've already been the one who adventured through all of time and space and helped every single doctor there was. You reached out and grabbed the doctor's foot when he was a kid on Gallifrey and made him scared of the dark. You've done this huge arc where you essentially, in some episodes, became the doctor. You've argued with the doctor and told him exactly what you think of him and that you didn't really like him and all of this stuff. Where else is there to go, you know? I'm hoping there is somewhere to go, and I do think at the end of the Christmas special, the Doctor and Clara are in a place where I think their relationship in Season 9 will be different to what it was in Series 8. But do we need more Clara? Do we really, really need more Clara? Or is it time to switch to someone new, meet a new face with a new personality and a new background and a new take on things and someone new to see the universe? It almost feels like it's lazy for a writer to just keep the same character around in the companion slot year after year, because they know how to write for them, they know what their background is. It's like probably pulling on an old pair of slippers. But does that make it right? I'm not sure that it does. Anyway, with that, that's the end of my top stories for the week. Hope you enjoyed those. And now, without any further ado, let's get on to that Doctor Who Christmas special. Alrighty then, the Doctor Who Christmas special has just aired just a few days ago, and I guess all of you out there have seen it. If you haven't, maybe this isn't the review to be listening to, because we are going to talk about it in all of its complexity and depth and breadth, and there's spoilers ahead if you've not seen it, so switch off now and come back to this at a later time if you've yet to see it. But for those who have, what did you think? Why don't you tweet us or email us and let us know? And as for the team here, I've got the Rev and I've got Lex, who are going to comment on the story. Unfortunately, Kate is travelling and can't at the moment. And Lex is on a bit of a dodgy line too, so please excuse that. What I did for this episode was I compiled some questions before the episode had aired and shot it out to the guys so that they could watch the episode and then shoot me back some answers as they were able to. So I kicked off by asking Lex and Rev, how were you feeling after the first 5 to 10 minutes? Let's start with Lex.
In the first 5 to 10 minutes, my first response was just a feeling of sadness. It was a sad beginning, really nostalgic, and the doctor was grumpy. He wasn't even that excited to see Clara, and Santa is weird and awkward, and the elves confuse me. I thought, like, trying to rationalize everything. Are elves aliens? What are they? Is Santa an alien? Is Santa not supposed to be real and now suddenly he is real and that's the problem? In hindsight now, actually, I can say I got that 100% right. Yeah, it was the problem that Santa was there. Anyways, I was just really confused and sad. I had all these questions, like, how did the Doctor and the Santa know each other? Why does nobody like tangerines? Is this some kind of strange world where nobody likes tangerines? I like tangerines. So what is Santa going to do to help the Doctor? It was an interesting hook. 5 to 10 minutes in, I thought it was an interesting hook. And I was right there with Clara also about that feeling of the not knowing how much you love that sound. That sound the TARDIS makes when it starts off a journey. It's good. So, but in whole, the first 5 to 10 minutes, not the most exciting introduction to an episode, but man, oh man, was it Christmassy.
All right, thanks, Lex. And Rev, what did you think after the first 5 to 10 minutes?
Well, already, I'm not really sure where this is going, because I always expect twists and turns with Mr. Moffat, but then sometimes, like my personal favourite, Dr. Whedon Wardrobe, he keeps it very simple as well, so who knows? But all I can say is that we get to this base in the North Pole, and really exciting, because about 10 minutes in, and they start performing to, doing a dance to I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day by Slade, which is a song that is absolutely grafted into my life, because it was at number one in the UK charts when I was born, and it's on every year, and it's just such a part of Christmases, definitely in Britain, that it's just one of those songs that is part of your life, and because it's part of my life, with it being my my birth tune, if you like. I love it, and I think that it probably makes me now canon in Doctor Who.
All right, which I guess just leaves me. After the first 5 to 10 minutes, I was wondering where it was all going to go. You know, obviously you had Santa Claus on Clara's rooftop, and it seemed to be pretty legit. And I was wondering, how exactly is this going to play out? How exactly are they going to justify that this is Santa, but Santa isn't real? But in Doctor Who fiction, Santa might be real. Is this a Robin Hood sort of scenario, like in Robot of Sherwood? What exactly is going on? So after the first 5 to 10 minutes, I wasn't too sure where it was going, and I wasn't sure I was going to like the episode. But anyway, let's move on. The next question I asked Lex and Rev is, what did you like best about the episode?
What did I like best in the episode? I love the mix of things, and I think that was sort of reminiscent of the whole last series, that you got a good mix of stuff. There was a mix of humour and horror and cleverness and silliness, and I think it was all there in this episode. And I mean, I'll probably contradict myself in a little bit, but God, having like this alien horror film on Christmas Day was really good fun. I love all that about the episode. I love that you didn't know it was going. It took on a roller coaster. It was like a squished down series. Marvellous.
All right, thanks, Rev. And Lex, what about you?
What I liked best about the episode? Definitely, I think my favourite moment was the... he goes back in time, or I guess Santa performs some kind of Christmas miracle, that second chance to see Clara. And at a time where she isn't 80 years old, and her first reaction is, am I young? And he goes, no idea. Hands her a mirror. Is that any good? That's so cute. As if he can't tell whether she's old or not. I love it. It's hard to tell whether or not the doctor can't realize the difference between an old person and a young one. Hard to tell. I really hope for his sake that he can. I thought it was oddly fitting that the 12th Doctor got to see Clara old, just like Clara got to see the 11th Doctor old. They really do form such a strong bond between Clara and the Doctor, I think. Clara's still slapping the Doctor. Still don't like that. I'll never be a fan of that, but I do love their bond, Clara and the Doctor. They've got something the other companions don't have, this timeless companionship. It's oddly romantic at one point in the episode. Wasn't so crazy about that. Well, there was that one guy, but it would never have worked. He's impossible. That was a bit weird. But hey, that never actually happened. Or did it? Confusing. I loved having Danny back, too. Oh, and the balloon animal guns. That was funny.
Okay, cool. For me, what I liked best about the episode is that it managed to tie everything together. Like I was talking about, after the first 5 to 10 minutes, I wasn't sure where it was going, whether it could pull off what it was trying to do. But through the concept of people dreaming certain aspects of the story, it became, you know, explainable. It became, you know, a good sci-fi explanation as to how certain things were happening. Of course, the door was still left open to Santa, obviously, well, not obviously, but Santa perhaps being real, even once all the dreaming was done, but it wasn't as in-your-face as it could have been. So that was nice. That was left not so much ambiguous, but just gently done, and I think the whole thing tied together pretty well. Now, I followed up that question with the obvious, was there anything you disliked about the episode? So let's kick off with Lex. Anything you disliked?
Well, no explanation of how Gallifrey wasn't actually found. I feel betrayed. And Clara never got a chance to explain to the Doctor why Danny wasn't saved, what happened. I didn't think the episode was that exciting. I didn't find the elves funny. Santa just didn't belong. He wasn't who I pictured as a Santa. I thought the face huggers were weird. Like, when they're about to attack, they open their mouth, sort of, or some kind of mouth-like opening, and it was unnecessarily goopy. Didn't have to be so slimy-looking. That was just unnecessary and gross. But yeah, back to that, it has this opening when it attacks, like a big giant mouth. I don't get that. What is it doing? Like, what's so scary about an opening crack? You know, it's not like it can leave the face that it's on. So what is it doing? What's with the opening thing? And why is it so bad that it's showing the face that it's eating? You would think that would be an opportunity to save the person underneath, you know? Opening itself up to see its victim. That seems like a bad attack idea. Oh, and I really didn't like the way that Clara was an old person. Her makeup looked very unhealthy. She looked like death. I know older people are closer to that stage of life, or the opposite of life, are closer to that stage, and that makeup just went beyond the limits of what a live person should look like. And she was just really bad at being an old person. Her voice did not sound old at all. Really disappointing.
Alrighty, and on to Rev.
Was there anything I disliked about the episode? That I disliked? Yes. Couple of things made me a bit worried. Now, one of them is something that I've discussed quite a bit with people. It's been discussed on the Diddly Dum podcast, that other podcast that I'm on. That's Clara slapping the Doctor has become a bit of a signature for the character and a bit of a trademark in the last series. I think it's about the third time she's slapped the Doctor across the face. And the problem with that, from my point of view, is that I did struggle with Peter Capaldi's the Doctor a little bit to start with because he was so different. And I did really look up to Clara as the hero and the person that was guiding me through the series, and I know a lot of kids do as well. And I don't really think a role model should be slapping people or suggesting that's a good way of getting out of a situation when someone says you something you don't approve of. You shouldn't be encouraging slapping. It's not a good thing, especially with your two heroes. The other thing I didn't like, I had to double check with a friend of mine, really, because I am, believe it or not, a grown-up, and I love Doctor Who. But of course, you know, when you get all geeky and into it and stuff, you analyse it differently, and of course you think that it's been made for you. But really, they're always saying it's been made for the kids and or with the family in mind. And it did worry me that they were referring to Father Christmas throughout it, not being believed in. And I know Stephen Moffat had already gone out his way to say it's absolutely the real Santa, don't you worry. But it's the fact that people were referring to when did you stop believing. When I thought, should kids really be seeing that on Christmas Day? So what I did, a friend of mine who really I use as a bit of litmus paper for the show, she's got two kids, and she's known as Fan in the Bath because she listens to our podcasts in the bath. And I said, I wanted to know what kids thought about these references, and they said, she said that they did question it. They did say, well, why don't they believe him? He is real, isn't he? And of course, she said, of course he's real, of course he's real. And then she said at the end it was great. Oh, yeah. See, he said he was real. So, but they shouldn't even have to, Doctor Who shouldn't be making them question that, I don't think, not on Christmas Day. And it got a bit tricky, I think, when one of her daughters was scared of the dream crabs, the face-hugging bit, and she said, don't worry, it's just a dream, you don't have to worry. And but if it's just a dream, then is Father Christmas real or not? I don't think parents should really have to be explaining that on Christmas Day. Well, everyone sat down to enjoy this programme, so those are the things I dislike about it.
Okay, for mine, I'll pull out a controversial thing, and I already talked a lot about this in my Stories of the Week, and I guess what I disliked about the episode is that Clara is staying on with the Doctor. I think Clara's farewell at the end of Series 8 was a bit too brief and a bit odd, and it seemed obvious that she was coming back, even though she wasn't in that initial trailer for the Christmas special. I think everyone had a sense of, yeah, she'll be back for that because her farewell just wasn't quite right. And I think in this Christmas episode, we had her appear again and the Doctor appear, and it's like, oh, we're going to do this again, are we? Okay, cool. And they have their great adventure. And then at the very end, and again, I talked about this in the news segment, so I'll be brief. You have Clara as an older woman who's had a great life, and she's reminiscing with the Doctor. And that would have been a good place to leave it. That the Doctor and Clara have confessed their lies to each other. That they've had another great adventure where things went pretty well. And now Clara is an old woman. She's at the end of her life. And what a great place to sign off. But no. Instead, she becomes young again, and we're going to have another series of Clara. I've already spoken at length about how I'd rather see Capaldi with a new companion. Not because I dislike Jenna Coleman in real life. To some degree, because I've kind of disliked her character in the last series, where I think she was just a bit obnoxious, is maybe just the simplest way I can put it. But that said, and again I'm rehashing old territory from the news segment, I think where the Doctor and Clara seem to be at the end of this Christmas special might see them interacting in a different way in the new series, so she might not seem as obnoxious. She might, you know, go off in another direction and be quite an interesting companion in her own right. That said, I would still rather, much rather, see a different companion in there and learn about someone new from a different part of the world with different world experiences who interacts with the Doctor differently. I'd much rather see that than more Clara, you know. But it is what it is. She's coming back. Moving on to my next question. I probably won't answer this because my answer to this is probably the answer I just gave to the other question. Did you like where the Christmas episode ended up? Did you like where it ended? How about you, Rev?
Oh, I think it was a glorious hour of television. The very, very final bit, I'm so glad that Clara's staying with the Doctor, and I'm so glad that it looks like they're going to go off and be proper buddies, and they ain't going to slap each other or be nasty to each other. They're just going to have fun in the universe. The Doctor and Clara will return. I like that. It threw up questions to me. I mean, what kind of questions? I'm still not sure whether we're in a dream or not by the end of it. Or even if that'll come back in the next series. You know, Alan Stephen Moffat likes playing with us, and I think that's why I wish he would just do a simple one, because now I'm questioning, I wonder if we're coming back to any of these bits. I wonder if we're going to see that again. Are they in a dream still or not? Because I'd like to know, what is this house that Clara keeps waking up in? Because if there's, you know, monsters is one thing and Father Chris is another thing. There's one thing I find very hard to believe is the fact that Danny Pink and Clara, or even Clara on her own, on a UK teacher's salary, certainly can't afford a house like that. So I don't know. I wished it in a dream.
All right. And over to Lex. Did you like where it ended up?
I didn't like where the episode ended up. It turned into one of those Christmas gifts you might get if you're lucky enough. A box inside a box inside a box inside a box inside a box. Ugh. Headache. Yeah, the dream within a dream. I wasn't a fan of that. That was just, ugh. When was it going to end? And, when it finally did end, the blonde girl, I forget her name, she checks off, forgive Dave. Who's Dave? Was it explained? It was weird that they just stuck that in there. Is Dave a real person in life? And it was like an inside joke to somebody else, of one of the producers of the show or writers. What was that? It seemed like some kind of Easter egg of sorts. Ha ha! Easter egg! Get it? Happy Easter. Come on, laugh. The Doctor would think it's funny. Okay, so Dave is forgiven. Wonder what Dave did.
Okay, and obviously for me, I did like where it ended up, in the sense that it was a great little adventure, and it ended with, you know, this beautiful scene of the Doctor seeing Clara as an old woman and not actually noticing that she was old, which I think was a beautiful touch as well. But no, I didn't like where it ended up because Clara's coming back, so no, I didn't like it. And the final question I put to the Rev and Lex, did it feel Christmassy? Lex?
Yes, it felt very Christmassy. It should win an award for being the most Christmassy Christmas special of Doctor Who ever. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year.
And Rev, what about you, mate? Did it feel Christmassy?
Yeah, it made me feel Christmassy. In fact, I found the bits that Father Christmas wasn't in making me feel longing for it to be more Christmassy. I was thinking, oh, come on, sellotape a bit of tinsel up in your base. Dream a bit of stuck-up tinsel, maybe, eh? Yeah, Christmassy. It was good, good fun, good use of it. I liked the snow on the TARDIS in the opening titles, and did we get some jingle bells in the beginning there? Fantastic, about time. Yeah, made me feel Christmassy. But I've got to say that I think this episode is one that you could watch any time of the year. The fact that they've used the dream motif. Then again, it could have been another Dream Lord episode, couldn't it? He could have come back. But that's fairly Christmas like it. And it was very good. And I suppose this is a good moment to wish all of you at home a very enjoyable festive season and have a very happy new year. And we'll see you again soon.
All right. For mine, it felt a little Christmassy. Obviously, it's hard not to feel Christmassy when there are Christmas decorations and trees in the background, as I recall, and Santa's in it and elves are in it and all that sort of stuff. But that was kind of like a surface sort of thing. My wife, Leo, who contributes to the podcast at times when we're talking about Star Wars Rebels, she made the comment to me, that was probably the best Christmas special because it wasn't that Christmassy. And I guess when you strip away some of the layers there, some of those top layers, it wasn't a deeply, deeply Christmas kind of thing. It wasn't as Christmassy as A Christmas Carol, for example. In some ways, it harks back to that David Tennant Christmas special where he was on the Titanic. Gosh, what was that called? Voyage of the Damned, where aside from the fact it was happening at Christmas time, it wasn't really that Christmassy. This is kind of more in that vein, and I kind of like that. It was a good episode to be watching at Christmas without being hit over the head with it's Christmas, it's Christmas, it's Christmas, you know, just all the time through it. The Santa thing is obviously there, but it's not a Christmassy thing, if I can put it that way. Anyway, that was the thoughts of Lex and Rev and myself on the Doctor Who Christmas special last Christmas. What did you think of it? Again, you can email us, you can tweet us, you can write to us on Facebook. You can send a carrier pigeon, you can do whatever you like, and we'll use your comments on the show. So, there you go. All right, you might remember in our previous episode, the Rev was doing a little segment, and at the end of that segment, he posed his own Doctor Who question. He'd been answering a Star Wars question as it was, and then at the end he posed this Doctor Who question. I'll just quickly replay the question to jog your memories.
Well, what I'd like to do now is just throw the floor open to another little question for the rest of the team. This time it's a Doctor Who one. When the series came back, I was really excited about the kind of things they could achieve, and I was thinking, I hope we get a dinosaur episode, and I hope we get a pirate episode, and I hope we get a Wild West episode, because they were great in the past, but I'd love to see them done now. And lo and behold, I got those, so I was very happy. And then when Time Heist came on, I suddenly thought, well, I never even imagined they could tap into that genre. So what else could they do? And I thought, what else would I like them to do? Well, I'd love the Doctor to turn up in the middle of a proper, you know, Marvel-type superhero story where we've got an actual proper superhero at the centre of the story, and what the Doctor would do in those situations, or what he'd do in some kind of, you know, comic book adventure. And also, I love rock concerts and festivals, and it would be absolutely marvellous to see the Doctor appear in the middle of some shenanigans or something going on backstage at a rock concert at the centre of a band. I know Big Finish have achieved that very well a couple of times, but it'd be lovely to see it on telly. You know, with a real or fictitious band, I don't mind. It could be good fun. Anyway, my question is to the rest of the team. What scenarios or genres would you like to see the Doctor pop up in a future episode?
And now, in response to that question, I've got Lex and Kate and myself with some replies. So let's kick off with Kate.
Okay, so which scenario or genre would I like to see the Doctor pop up in? That's a great question, Rev. You know, we've seen the Doctor already show up in so many different genres and scenarios. This question was kind of hard. I had to think about it for a while. And I agree with you. I think that a music festival would be very cool. Maybe like a galactic Woodstock or something like that. And then, of course, I'm a big Beatles fan, so I would love to see an episode featuring any or all of the Beatles in the 60s or any time, really. And so that made me think, you know, I do actually rather like musicals. So how about a musical episode of Doctor Who? Possibly animated, possibly claymation. I don't know. But I think definitely like an entire episode where they sing the whole episode would be pretty awesome.
All right. Very cool. What about you, Lex?
Hey, Rev. I'm going to make this short and simple. Doctor Who should have an episode where the TARDIS translates everything into palindromes. I think it's got to be someplace like Trenzalore, a planet that has some kind of truth field, except instead of truth, it's palindromes. Just because it would be really amusing? Yep, my one and only wish.
Okay, and now for me, I would like to see the Doctor do more historical things. It is a hallmark of the earlier years of the show. Indeed, it's why the show was created, if people don't know that. It was really created to teach history to younger kids, but then it morphed off into this sort of sci-fi thing, and the historicals, as they were called, were quickly forgotten by, I think during the era of the Second Doctor. And although we have the Doctor now go back in time to historical eras, they're not historical stories per se. They've always got a more of a sci-fi element or whatever. You think of, say, I don't know, The Visitation, where the Fifth Doctor goes back to the Great Fire of London. That would be an historical if the Fifth Doctor was simply there and the fire started and they were dealing with that and just interacting with regular Londoners and dealing with the fire. That would be an historical. But instead you have, you know, an alien presence and so on and all of that. And that's what makes it more of a regular sci-fi episode of Doctor Who, and why those kinds of episodes aren't called historicals in the Doctor Who sense. So I would like to see Doctor Who do more historicals, genuine historicals. I would like to see the Doctor go back to an era, and now in my head I'm thinking of the Tennant story where he and Martha were back in London, Shakespeare Code, there we go, Shakespeare Code, and, you know, rather than having that sort of otherworldly element to the supernatural goings on, actually have something that's rooted in Earth culture and things that can just happen on Earth, and things that are scary precisely because they're not an alien threat or something supernatural, but because someone in the story is simply evil. You know, you come across an evil person from Earth in an historical era, that's as compelling to me as it is going back to an historical era and having, you know, an event explained because it was aliens. You know, okay. I'd much rather be seeing historicals in a pure historical sense. So although that's not specifically name-checking or calling out an era to you, like I'm not saying, oh, it should be the Battle of Waterloo, or it should be Alexander the Great, or it should be this, or it should be that. I'm not so much doing that, but just saying in general, I'd love to see historicals. So look, great question, Rev, and if any of the rest of the team have questions they'd like to pose in this sort of way, please do so. It's lots of fun. And if you out there listening have a question you'd like to hear myself and the Rev and Kate and Lex answer in episodes ahead in 2015, why not pop it to us on Twitter? Why not email it to us? Why not, you know, put it up on our Facebook page? That would be very cool. We love answering things like that. I think it lets us go a bit off script. It lets us let our imaginations run free a bit beyond, you know, straight reviews and news and things like that. We love doing this. Send one in. Cheers. Alrighty, moving on. Something we're very keen to do here at Who Wars whenever one of the team is out and about is to have them talk to fans out there, you know, whether it's via Skype, whether it's someone they met, then they have a Skype conversation, or whether they're at an actual event and they're chatting away with some fellow fans. This show is grassroots podcasting by fans for fans, and we never want to lose sight of that. So at a recent convention called FanFest, Kate was there. She was dressed up as Amy Pond. You may have seen some images of that online. I think her Twitter avatar is still currently her dressed up as Amy Pond, if I'm not mistaken. And Kate got around and asked a bunch of people at FanFest the time-honoured Who Wars question, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Hey everybody, Kate here. I'm coming to you live from the Phoenix Comic Con FanFest. Well, actually, by the time you listen to it, it won't be live. But anyway, I've been going up to people and asking them a simple question, Star Wars or Doctor Who? Can I ask you a question for a podcast?
Sure, go for it.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
I'm talking to a stormtrooper, by the way. Do you want to tell us about your costume?
Sure, yeah. I'm actually a 501st Legion member. My TK ID is TK71114, and I've been with the 501st since May, and yeah, I'd say Star Wars. Doctor Who's still pretty cool, but Star Wars kind of takes precedence since I have a Stormtrooper costume on.
Right. Gotcha. Yep. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
That's not even fair.
I know, right?
Both.
Do you want to tell us about your costume?
That's a Fourth Doctor cosplay.
Awesome. And you're waiting for a Star Wars panel, right?
Yes. So
awesome.
Both.
Okay, so Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Man, that's tough. As a kid, I was a huge fan of the Fourth Doctor, but then Star Wars came out, and I think once you see Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon, nothing beats that.
So the question is, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
All right. Do you want to tell us about your costume? That's really cool.
It's actually a Doctor Who.
It's a Doctor Who. It's a 11th Doctor / Dalek, right? That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, you look really cool in it, right?
All right. So how about you?
Mommy, of course, Dr. Hill.
And
awesome.
Of course,
I decked him out, right?
Is that your screwdriver is a shark.
Awesome. That's pretty cool.
Can I ask you guys a question for a podcast?
Yes, Pond, you may.
All right, you noticed. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Why do you hate me?
You can say both.
What did I ever do to you?
You can say both.
Both.
You can say
both.
Okay, that's fine. That's awesome. Here is the 10th Doctor. I am heading over there now. Excuse me. Can I ask you a question for a podcast?
No, but yeah.
No?
Okay. Sure.
You'll like it. Okay, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Oh, yeah, Doctor Who.
Do you want to tell us about your costume?
10th Doctor, the Easy TARDIS booth at FanFest this year.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right. Okay, there's a couple Trekkies, so let's see what they have to say. Excuse me. Excuse me.
Yes,
can I ask you a question for a podcast?
Sure.
All right. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
All right. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
All right. Thank you.
Well, yes, it would be.
All right. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Come
Doctor
on,
Who.
Doctor Who.
We're at the AC TARDIS booth.
Tell us about your costumes.
Well, my costume is actually the Fourth Doctor.
Awesome.
I'm Tom Baker.
That is very cool.
The actual costume, though, is from the serial The Ark in Space.
Cool. Nice. And?
I'm just a simple Captain Jack Harkness trench coat.
Very nice.
Torchman badge.
That's pretty
cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
All
definitely
right.
Doctor Who.
Can you tell us about your costumes? They're very cool.
Thank you very much. I am TARDIS and Relative
nice.
Dimension in Space.
Very cool.
AKA My Sexy.
Yeah.
Yes. Hello, my name is Sexy.
Very cool. You're the first, well actually the second, to 11th Doctor I see.
Oh, awesome.
Cool.
The 11th Doctor's the best.
I know.
Yeah. Oh,
exactly.
I didn't see your arm.
Oh, you like
now.
That?
Very
yeah.
cool.
Yep.
Miss Amy, I see.
Yes. Come
love
on, Pond, right?
Yeah.
Okay, there's an Imperial Guard. Let's try to get him. All right. Excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me.
Something to go on.
Hi, can I ask you? Oh, hi. It's the Emperor, too. Can I ask you guys a question for a podcast?
Okay.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Star Wars?
You can't talk.
You can't talk? Oh, okay.
Can't
I think
hear.
It's Star Wars.
Nobody else thinks.
Oh, it's you. I've got the guy that was Qui-Gon Jinn yesterday, and I lost that audio, so maybe he can recreate what he said.
So I've been watching Doctor Who since before I was born. My mother watched it when she was pregnant with me.
All right. So you were a Doctor Who, but obviously you like both of them. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Oh, definitely Doctor Who.
Can you tell us about your costume?
I am Missy.
Yes, that's
the master.
Yes, very nice.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Can I get you guys?
Yes.
All right. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Oh, Doctor Who. Definitely.
Yeah, I had a feeling. How about you?
Just a bit.
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. Do you want to tell us about your costumes?
I am Ramona One.
Nice.
You are.
And I am Clara Oswald.
Cool. Thank you. Oh, from the Time Heist episode, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Oh, really?
I'm undercover.
Oh, okay. Do you want to tell us about that and your costume?
Well, sure. I've been a fan of Doctor Who since I was a kid because it was one of the only shows you could get
right.
on PBS.
Gotcha.
You know, we didn't have cable. And,
yeah.
And
cool.
It was simple enough to where, as a kid, I could understand
right.
it. But my love was really Star Wars. When those movies started coming out, it was almost a religion for me. You know,
yeah.
Force, good in everybody.
That's cool.
And I actually ended up making a set of Stormtrooper armor.
Oh, wow.
Over a course of 7 months.
That's awesome.
And joined a group that raises millions of dollars for charities by costuming.
Got these cool steampunk guys here. All right, so Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
All right.
So I'm actually a member of 501st. I'd feel like a traitor if I didn't go with Star Wars.
All right, do you want to tell us about what character you are there?
With the 501st, I'm either a sand trooper or one of the people that actually makes sure that sand troopers don't walk into things.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay, I got Batman here. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars, all the way.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Awesome. Do you want to tell us about your costume?
I'm just wearing a simple Jedi costume that was made for me, actually.
Very awesome.
I'm part of a group called Syndicate Saber Arizona, and we focus on lightsaber combat.
Very awesome. Cool. The question is, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Awesome. That's interesting. Do you want to tell us about your costume?
Yeah, I'm in a TARDIS today.
Awesome.
But Star Wars is part of my childhood. It's
exactly.
Part of my culture.
I totally understand. Hey guys.
Hello.
Can I ask you a question for a podcast?
Sure.
All right. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Star Wars. Unanimous. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Hi. Can I ask you guys a question for a podcast? Okay. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Do you want to tell us about your costumes? Very cool.
Emperor's New Groove.
I mean, nice.
He's my crunk.
Very cool. Awesome. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, there's a really cool Queen Amidala. It's the one with the black dress where it's got, like, the hood with the feathers and stuff. Okay, hi.
Hi.
Can I ask you a question for a podcast?
Sure.
Okay, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Oh, Star Wars.
Awesome. Do you want to tell us about your costume?
This is Queen Amidala.
Awesome.
The black travel gown. It's handmade.
Very cool.
And won Most Beautiful and the Lucasfilm Award at San Diego.
Awesome.
This past
very cool. Are you part of the Rebel Legion or anything?
I am, yes.
Very nice.
And it's a great group. We do so many other things.
Very cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
Do you want to tell us about your costume?
I'm dressed up as Osgood from the season finale.
Yep.
Because I refuse to accept that she's dead.
Exactly, right? She's
right.
Smart.
Yeah. I'm just hoping on, like, Santa making everything all better.
Oh, that's an interesting theory.
Like Santa had better make everything all better.
That's true. Yeah. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who. Just answer.
You can say both if you want.
Both.
Okay. Do you want to tell us about your costume?
Oh, I am Vera, so I'm Jane's hat.
Nice. That's awesome. I'm loving all the Jane hats I'm seeing today.
They're pretty awesome.
Yeah. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Since you're wearing Doctor Who, I'm going to have to answer Doctor Who.
All right, you guys want to tell me about your costumes?
Well, I'm River Song from the Silence episode.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
From the Silence episode.
Very cool.
And I'm the Doctor from the Silence episode.
Very cool. And I'm also Amy from the Silence episode.
Okay,
so, high five. Okay, so Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
You want to tell us about your costumes?
Well, I'm a Jawa.
I'm a Mandalorian merc.
Nice. Very cool. So the question is Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Star Wars!
All right. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
I'm in the wrong room.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
You want to tell us about your
costume?
Do you want to tell us about your costume?
I have no idea.
The 10th Doctor. Awesome. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
All right. Do you want to tell us about your costumes?
Well, just regular old Jedi.
Jedis.
Sith Lord.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Interesting dynamic there. Are you guys going to have a duel?
We tried.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Okay. So I got Tom and Jerry and Spike here. Star Wars or Doctor Who, guys?
Star Wars. You can't compare the two. Come on.
Star Wars.
All right. So looks like we got some Star Wars fans here. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
Tell me about your costumes.
I'm dressed as the 10th Doctor.
Awesome.
I'm Rose Tyler.
Donna Noble.
Very cool. Great job, guys. Okay, I'm here with Porkins. Do you like Star Wars or Doctor Who better?
Well, given that I'm dressed as Porkins from Star Wars, I would say Star Wars.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so I'm here with Mike Mayhew, the creator of the Star Wars comic series. So, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Oh, I'll take Star Wars any day just because they have more sort of firepower and cooler weapons.
Awesome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the Star Wars series?
The Star Wars is a book I drew for Dark Horse Comics, and it's an 8-issue miniseries that told the story of George Lucas's original 1974 screenplay. And it was a lot different from the film that came out in 1977, but it's really interesting to see where all the characters came from. They were a lot different than the ones we came to know and love.
Awesome. Thanks. Have you ever met George Lucas?
No, I have not, but I understand that he was involved in the process of this book and sort of saw the artwork as it was coming in, so it was kind of, I think it did have his blessing in that sense.
Okay, awesome, thank you. So, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
All right, do you want to tell us about your outfits?
I was going to be Amy Pond. I really love Doctor Who.
I could tell.
Yeah. I really like Doctor Who, so I like begged my mom to buy me this dress, and she's like,
very cool.
No, and I'm like, please, and she's like, no, and I'm like, I'll buy it. She's like, okay, whatever.
Cool.
Yeah. So my TARDIS
very
dress,
cool.
Yes. I did have a headband that has a TARDIS light,
oh,
but,
nice.
But I accidentally forgot it at home.
Okay, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Interesting. Do you want to tell us about your costume?
Well, I knew that everyone was going to be doing Doctor Who, so I decided to come as Doctor Who as a zombie.
Very cool. Very good one. That's creative. Okay, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Star Wars. Star Wars. How about you, little Darth Vader?
Speak up.
Star Wars. All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Okay, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Star Wars.
Awesome. Do you want to tell us about your costume?
Just Amanda.
Cool.
So,
very
nice.
Kind of
like yeah.
Very cool. Looks great. All right. Have a good one.
We've got some indoor action going on here. There's the Ewok and some Rebel fighters, it looks like. Let's go up to them.
Hello. Can I ask you guys a question for a podcast? All right. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
Star Wars.
Interesting. Do you want to tell us about your costumes?
Endor Princess Leia.
Nice.
He'll be able to.
Okay.
Let's see. This is my son's old Halloween costume.
Nice.
He turned into an Ewok.
Nice.
Sculpted the face and the lips and stuff. Basically just made it out of a pair of glasses and then a little piece of foam.
Cool.
And stuck all the fur on it.
Nice.
So, and then the rest of it's foam, dyed stuff, basically
cool.
Surplus, built the weapons
Rebel
and stuff.
Very awesome. All right, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
Star Wars.
On the fence?
She'd be on the fence.
Poor thing.
I can't decide.
You can choose both if it's
both.
Easier. Okay.
There you
All right,
go.
Cool. Do you want to tell us about your costumes? They're very cool.
I'm the 11th Doctor.
Nice.
I'm a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Cool.
Early Darth Vader.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Well, I'm a big Star Wars fan, but you never forget your first Doctor, so I'd say Doctor Who.
Awesome. And tell us about your costume.
Well, I'm dressed as the 4th Doctor. If you want to get technical, I'm from the Season 17 era, so about 1979, based from the story called City of Death.
Cool. Awesome. Do you have any jelly babies left?
Do I have any jelly babies? You know what?
Oh, you still got some. Awesome.
All right, so there you have it. My first of hopefully many Man on the Street segments like this, where I go out to cons and fan events and hear from like-minded fans. I have some pretty cool stuff planned for the future, so maybe I'll see you out there. But until then, allons-y, and may the Force be with you.
Ah, hello. Welcome to the first Rev View. Yeah, you see what I did? Of the 12th Doctor comics from Titan. And I'm excited to be taken over from issue 3 because it's the start of a new story. I am totally immersed in issues 1 and 2 though, so I'm really rollicking through this from the beginning, which is very exciting. Well, our intro to The Sword of Kali is as rocking an opening as any of the TV episodes. Fast-paced and exciting, borrowing very heavily from the latter Moffat, Matt Smith, timey-wimey episodes. We go through a number of different locations and different times very quickly. through a thrilling set piece with sound effects and guns set in India in 1825. Then we catch up with the Doctor and Clara, who are visiting an old friend from season 17 in Italy in 1505. And at the end of this trans-temporal, trans-global Bondiana Jones location fest opening, we get a reveal of a new monster. Ooh. Right then, so what happens? How does this story kick off? Well, the Doctor gets a phone call on the TARDIS phone from an old friend of his called Tiger Maratha, who was in Mumbai in 2314, and he needs the Doctor to go to him. So the Doctor and Clara set off on a mission. But by the time they arrive, they find themselves in the middle of a murder scene. And it's, sorry to say, it's poor old Tiger. And then, together with Tiger's daughter, Priyanka, they have a chance meeting with these amazing futuristic precog police. And this puts the Doctor in the prime suspect position. And the police are there by a coincidence, and they're investigating Tiger's involvement with a family called the Scandias. All right. And it transpires that they're a rich and influential family consisting of a mixture of militarians and scientists and art and lifestyle guru members. And they rule over Haven, a starship that can house millions of individuals from the overcrowded cities of India. And they present themselves as saints, but they have a secret. The secret the Doctor seems to know. Anyway, we actually then go to meet the Scandias as they receive a post-mortem of the previous few pages from the precog police. So they're actually working for them, you see, rather than against them. And we get to see their secret. It turns out they're the monsters we saw in the pre-credit frames. But what becomes of these bumbling police? Well, let's just say these are your standard, nothing will stand in our way, step aside, pathetic human monsters. We then cut to the Scandia temple, because basically the Doctor and Clara and Priyanka have done one, you see. They've legged it from the police, and that's what they've just been destroyed for. And they've come to the Scandia temple, which it turns out was one of the buildings we saw in the opening frames. And this is where things get clever in this comic strip. It's very clever time-wise, in a way Douglas Adams and Stephen Moffat would be very proud of. The Doctor, Clara and Priyanka discover the temple exists simultaneously in different time zones. But what building doesn't? Well, this one has a button, meaning you can shift between the zones. And the Doctor finds this button. Does he press it? Of course he does. And then, well, bit more action, and we get a double whammy, all-monster, multi-time zone cliffhanger to the story. Oh, wow, that's good stuff. So, I've tried to be not spoilerific as I can be, because I want you to enjoy the comic, but what I'm going to talk about is the page layout to start with, because it's really good, and the colour balance of the overall page is good. When you have an overall glance, though, for me it suggests that the artwork is aimed more at a younger rather than comic book collector audience. But as many of the TV episodes aim themselves at a young target audience, this is completely acceptable. And there are a few alienating elements, I thought. References to the British Empire and their rule of India are introduced in a way that sort of assumes the reader must already have this knowledge. But I've got a feeling this is going to be a theme that the story will return to in future installments. So let's watch this space and have a look there. The Doctor is contacted by an old friend, but rather than leave it at that, there are several visual references to a former incarnation who only seems to be there for momentary joy rather than plot development. The Doctor is the Doctor. Read it in the 12th Doctor's voice. It totally works. But hey, here's some fun, a game I like to play, different Doctor, different voice, because a lot of the time people say they just write for a generic Doctor, and you might think, oh, no, that's not true, you know, I can only imagine this Doctor saying it. Read the Doctor's lines in any Doctor's voice of your choice, a great fun, and I like playing that game. There's one thing I really dislike, is the continued bad characterisation of Clara, which carries through from issues 1 and 2. Rather than the witty and brave-hearted care of the Doctor, Titans Clara, is a generic female companion, not seen since the 80s in the TV show, and really, they're not doing her justice, and it would be better not featuring her, maybe create a new character. Out of interest, verbal references put this story before Dark Water, so you know exactly where Clara is here. Right, so I'm a designer, and this time I'm going to comment on the artwork. The colourist has made a few frames that are obvious portfolio showcase pieces with some great showing of effects, but this doesn't carry through all the frames. Now, this is consistent with Louis Guerrero, who's done the colouring. If you look at his Deviant Art site, he's very good at doing great set pieces, but he's capable of so much more with shading and tones. I'm also seeing some Photoshop techniques in the artwork that I use. Use of a function called posterize, use of cut and paste, which is very obvious to my eye. But this isn't a sign of laziness from Guerrero or the artist Dave Taylor. I use these techniques for projects that have got a fast turnaround or a low budget. So just like a TV episode, this all has to be considered for the production of the comic, which will have a tight schedule, and the art guys will have to adjust their styles to reflect this. If you look at Dave Taylor's blog, you can see the difference between the work he's produced here compared with the detailed frames he's produced for 2000 AD and even Batman. You do get to see some of his Mega City 1 architecture now in the background of the futuristic Indian skylines. Dave is an exceptional artist, so look him up on d-taylor-comics-music-ford-mustangs.blogspot.co.uk. Our monster isn't something totally new either. A muscular orc, goblin, Lord of the Rings tribute, which is nice enough, but it's not its own thing. Like the glory days of Iron Legion and the work of John Ridgway and the Sixth Doctor strip of the 80s. This is early days, though, and it's better to start off like this and develop. It feels like it's going to grow and expand and get bigger. Great to be at the start, and you should all get it. And in 12 issues' time, look at how it's grown into itself and become its own thing.
Hey, so, Christmas vacation over here. I'm away from home, and I don't have my notes with me on what I thought about the comic that I just most recently read. The newest issue of The 11th Doctor from Titan Comics. All I have is this note that I wrote on my computer saying, "Amazing," all in capital letters. I don't even have words to describe. And yeah, that still kind of remains. I am still suffering from the mind-blown experience that was reading this particular issue. It was so cool. You go back in time. And I don't mean back in time like he does every episode. I mean time progresses backwards. Yes, think about that. I was panicking while reading this issue because I knew I wouldn't be able to describe properly how good it was. It was exactly what I wanted a Doctor Who comic to be. Mind-twisty, timey-wimey, wobbliness. And guess what? A potted plant saved the day. Yes, a potted plant named Dave. Which, now that I think about it, is kind of peculiar, seeing as this Christmas special episode featured a guy named Dave at the end who was forgiven. Okay, yeah, fine. The character in the episode probably wasn't forgiving a potted plant named Dave, but interesting correlation. It's a popular name. Also, that creature I was describing last review is in this issue as well, and he plays an even bigger role, way cooler than he was last time, too. So, lots of reasons to look into this issue. Trust me on it. It's a lot of fun. I think it's on sale December 24th, so look out for it. I had a lot of fun reading it. You can read it forwards and backwards. Yes, I read it backwards. Okay, that's all I have to say. Yob! That's bye backwards. Hee.
Alrighty, that brings us to the end of the 20th Who Wars. My thanks, as always, to the team. Kate, the Rev, and Lex. Of course, I've got Leo in support here. She didn't contribute to this episode, but she's a constant in my life, and I love her for it. What else? Who Wars is still on a two-week schedule at present, so you won't be hearing us again on the 4th of January, which is the next Sunday from now, but you'll be hearing us on the 11th of January, and after that on the 25th of January. So you've got a little while to listen to and digest this episode and get some questions into us and still be in time for our next episode. We also have some very cool stuff coming up, possibly in the next episode, although maybe in the January 25th episode. I haven't quite decided yet, but we do have a very, very, very cool competition coming up with prizes. Yes, real prizes that are actually very cool if you're a Whovian. So stay tuned for that. And again, my thanks to the team. My thanks to you as well for listening at home or in your car or on the train or bus, wherever you might be listening to us. It's because of you listening that we keep making these things. We don't want to talk into a vacuum. We want to, you know, communicate two-way with you guys out there. By fans, for fans, grassroots podcasting. You can't beat it. And until next time, I remain Rob Irwin. Take care of yourselves out there, and we'll see you later.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.